Welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could be with us today. Are you still thrilled by writing down the numbers 2015? Welcome to the new year. We joined you in the studio last week, and so as promised, we have resumed our programming. Are you ready for a music show? Yes, it's another music show. There's a little bit more going on than music in this particular program. We're going to be talking to Kathleen Hannon. Kathleen Hannon. I will give you her website for those among us who might have access to the internet while you're listening to the show. Her website is www.kathleenhannon.com. www.kathleenhannon.com. Kathleen Hannon. When you're out in Google, all you have to do is write Kathleen Hannon and look for the word chorus, and her, she'll pop up. Welcome to the studio, Kathleen.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Oh, Kathleen, thanks so very much. Now, listener, before we do anything, what we are going to do is give you an idea of what it is Kathleen does. She is a local genius. There's no question she's a local genius because she has been working for over 10 years as an award-winning songwriter and as a community chorus builder. Is that right?
Well, I've been working for
more than
30
years
as a songwriter. 40 years as a songwriter.
It shows.
And 10 years running this chorus, these choruses in the North Carolina Triangle. There's one in Carrboro and one in Durham. And what's unusual about them is that they're not performing choruses. They're really a place where we sing songs that are heart-opening songs. And we sing songs from lots of different spiritual traditions that have that ability to turn us towards who we are at a deeper level, at a level of spirit.
The name of this chorus is called Bodies, Voices, and Spirit, Community Chorus of Women. They're in their 10th year, and the description is weekly adventures in heart, song, and simple movement. Where did this come from, Kathleen?
Well, I've been a musician my whole life, and I've always sung with people. I grew up in a family where we did the folk song thing. We sang all kinds of songs together in my family. And as a performing songwriter, I always got people in the shows to sing along with me. And then when I was in my 50s, I went through a midlife crisis, an illness, where I developed asthma, actually. And I got very, very sick. And my mother had died when she was 50, and I was 50. So I just got really afraid of dying, and I got very sick. And in the process of getting well, I discovered that if I would let my breathing slow down in meditation, I started to heal. I started to feel better. And after 10 months of basically meditating a couple hours a day, I had a very profound experience. Well, it's kind of hard to tell it in a short time here, but what basically I discovered was that inside of me, my heart is alive, and it's like a tangible love essence. And then I came out from that meditation, and I felt it in everyone else. It's in everyone. It's in everything, every tree, every animal, even inanimate objects. And that was a surprise to me. I didn't know that I had that in me. So that was a big transformative moment in my life. So then the songs that I started to write were trying to express that. And, you know, in spiritual poetry or in the ancient traditions, people are always saying, Lao Tzu said that the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. So you cannot really say any of this in words. Words can't really describe it, and yet people try to describe it all the time in words. So that's what my songs started to do. And then I had this idea, you know, people want to sing. Why don't I just do like a yoga class, only it'll be singing and movement and not have to do gigs that, you know, when you go to a gig, there's a microphone and then there's the people out there and the people up here and it's kind of a split between the audience and the stage. What if I just get together in a room with people and sing with them? So it turned out people really want to do this, and we've been doing it for 10 years. And
I listen, and you tell this story so simply, effortlessly. But let's listen. If there were one song that you'd like to open up and introduce our listener to your work, what would it be?
Well, the first cut on the album is it's called I Know Myself, and it comes out of that experience of really sensing the essence. In Native American culture, they say all my friends and relations. On the deepest level, we're all made out of the same thing. And what it is actually love. So this first song is trying to describe that.
I know myself in each green tree. I know my heart in the empty sky. I am right here, always right here. From deep in the center of everything, I know myself in I know myself in each green tree. I know my heart in the empty sky. I am right here, always right.
Oh, Kathleen, that was a beautiful composition.
Thank you very much.
I know myself in your eyes.
Mm. So yeah, if you look there, you see, if we look at each other's eyes right now, there's something that's aware, right? We have different color eyes, different faces, but there's something that's the same in you as in me. That's awareness. It's very simple. And we don't, you know, we know this. Everybody knows it, but we don't put our attention on it. We put our attention on how we're different.
I understand what you're saying. And so when I listen to this and I trying to wrap my head around your work and your mission, I think about this as this. Many people feel they could not carry a tune, but could work in a chorus. And you say that you're not a performing chorus, but a community practicing heart-centered singing and movement to bring out our awareness to the deeper realms of who we are, our spirit. What do you learn? What have you learned in these 10 years?
Well, this is a very interesting thing that I learned about, just about teaching singing, but it does have a deeper a resonance, spiritual resonance, which is that, you know, some people feel that they can't carry a tune or sing on key. Yeah. And they've been told that. They were probably told that as children at some point. And so people will tell me, I love to sing, but I don't sing well enough to come. Well, first of all, this is not a performing course, so you don't have to have any level of skill to come. It's open to all women. It would be open to men, except I don't have a big enough range to give men their notes. That's the only reason. We started with men, and it didn't work that well. So it's not trying to keep the men out. It just wasn't working. Anyway, what I discovered was that the people who couldn't carry a tune, I noticed by looking at them that they were either shutting out their own voice or they were shutting out the teacher's voice or the other people's voices. You could see them. They were kind of closing their eyes and putting their hands over their ears, trying to go inside and hear the song. And I would say, well, it's good that you listen to yourself, but you have to listen to me at the same time so that you can find out if those notes match up. It would be like a stereo. You know, you have stuff on the left and stuff on the right, and you can turn that pan knob in the middle, and you can balance it out so that you can hear the stuff on the left and the right. So this happens with musicians know this, but we don't even necessarily consciously know it. Of course, if you're a musician, you have to listen to the other instruments and your own instrument at the same time. But yeah. People, probably they had a teacher that said, listen to me, and they stopped listening to themselves, or they tried to shut it out and go inside so they could hear. So when I tell people this, you can see what happens. They move from this kind of fearful place because they can't quite figure out why it's not quite in key, and they start to listen to both things, and they stand up, and they start to smile, and they start to be able to learn the song. And this is right away. This is not like weeks later. It's just like amazing. And so I just tell the whole group, remember, listen to your own voice and the other voices. And every time I say that, and this is years, every time we remember that, it just comes into tune. It comes into balance. The natural harmonies start to, you know, really work. So this is like a lifelong thing that you could get better and better at hearing yourself and others. So there you see the metaphor, you know, for life. And also in terms of the spiritual level where we're all one, you have to let go of this separate identity. So when you start hearing yourself and others, you start to hear the whole. So it's a pretty profound thing.
Well, I'm sitting here and I'm saying how many times people ask me, Leanne, what do you think about our community? Or Leanne, what do you have any ideas about what we could do to attract a different demographic or whatever, fill in the blank. And when I heard you explain this to me now, it makes me extremely aware of the power of any community builder needs to be able to balance the listening with the speaking or the singing.
Yeah.
And we have to do that in real time at this in the same moment.
Yeah.
So one of the things that when you go to, and I'll read the site again, it's www.kathleenhannon.com, KathleenHannon.com.
And wait, my sister discovered a couple of days ago that if you type in Kathleen Hannon, and you even spell Hannon wrong, but if you put the word chorus, you'll find my website.
Okay.
So all just right. Remember, put the word chorus, and
you'll find, you'll get and you'll it. Be found. And there's a true reasons of this, is that many of us appreciate music. We may not be able to listen to it all the time, but there's lyrics to your songs, which are published on your website as well. Maybe you could help us understand, where do those lyrics come from?
I don't know if anybody understands where
so
things
you compose
come
your
from.
Own lyrics.
Some of the songs on the album are based on spiritual poetry by other people. So about four of them, I think, are in that category.
There is
so
one.
We might play one of those.
Let's play one of these. How about the one about the Japanese?
Yeah, this is based on a poem by Izumi Shikibu, who was a Buddhist woman who lived in the 10th century in Japan. And when you listen to it, it's talking about the moon. In Eastern religions, in Buddhism and in Hinduism, the moon represents consciousness. So the moon represents what I'm talking about in terms of this thing that we all share. The moon is wholeness. So even when we look at the moon, we come into a kind of stillness that is not the mind. So the moon is a very powerful symbol in many cultures of peace, a symbol of peace. Anyway, it's track number 13, and it's translated by Jane Hirschfield, who's a poet, wonderful poet herself, and who gave me permission to use her translation.
Watching the moon at midnight, alone in the middle of the sky, I saw myself completely. I saw myself completely. I knew myself completely. Oh, no part left out. Watching the moon at midnight, alone in the middle of the sky, I saw myself completely. I saw myself completely. I knew myself completely. Oh, no part left out. Watching myself completely. I knew myself completely. Oh, no part left out. No part left out. No.
Absolutely beautiful composition, Kathleen.
Thank you. So actually, I want to just say something about this. This song has a dance with it. And some of what we do in chorus are simple circle dances with the singing. And that might sound, you know, daunting to people at first because, oh, I got to sing and I also got to dance. But remember, it's not a performance at all. It's more like a spiritual practice. It is a spiritual practice. But also, when you're dancing while you sing, you forget about worrying about singing. And when you sing while you dance, you forget about worrying about dancing. So it just absorbs your whole self and it makes it actually easier. You have to trust me on that.
Oh, I can do more than trust. Now, listeners, you trust me enough to tune in every hour. I take that responsibility diligently, actually passionately. And I visited Kathleen in here in Carver, North Carolina. We went on, was it December 17th, Kathleen?
I think so, yeah.
It was a Wednesday evening. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you what happened. I arrived there a little bit early. Actually, I'm going to cue up a stick. We have a recording of a little sound that I'd like you all to listen to. It's only a minute long. Check this out. Bodies, voices, and spirit.
It's really a community chorus of women, but I don't use that part very often, just so that people know it's just women. And the reason for that, I started with men. I don't have a huge range, so if a guy couldn't find the notes, I couldn't sing low enough to give him the notes. And it was and because it's not, you don't have to be a good singer at all, you just sing however you sing. Some of the guys were fine, but yes, some of them couldn't find their notes, and it was really frustrating for them and for other people because they were singing. So I just decided, it was mostly women who want to do this sort of thing anyway.
Yes.
Sing and dance. It's just really, you know, so we just, that's since the really second year, we just had women.
And that started in Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah, it started in someone's living room in Durham because she had a piano, and I was looking for someone. I live too far in the country, so I was looking for someone in town who had a piano.
Okay.
She's the first person I asked.
Beautiful. And that's right. And I couldn't cue that up any faster because those are the sounds of you setting up. And I want the listener to understand. I came out to Kathleen's group. She invited me. It took us a few weeks to figure out the perfect date. I went there and I got there, as always, early with two mics. One is the recording mic, not to record the performance, as we explained to each other, but rather just get the sound of the building, get the sound of what it was like. And what happened to me in that hour? You sing from 7 to 8, is that
right? We sing from 7 to 9.
7 to 9. I had to leave a little early because of a board meeting thing. It was absolutely shocking because these women are from all shapes and sizes, all age brackets, you name it. And they knew each other. They knew what to do, how to make a circle. There were a lot of women there.
25, I think 25 or so.
Okay, mm-hmm. Which is amazing at Christmas time in the holiday mm-hmm. season. And what was so shocking to me was they were moving. They actually moved. They actually moved while they were singing and listening.
And you did.
Well, yes, of course.
So actually, what did that feel like to you? What was it like for you?
I have to tell you the truth. I was at a funeral in November in Massachusetts. One of my dearest painting friends passed on after a very brave battle with cancer. And our daughter Emma, went up with me, and we were at a service. It was a memorial mass. And we were singing, there's a beautiful prayer called the Our Father in our faith. And Emma and I stood next to each other and started to move together, just gentle leaning back, swaying back and forth. No one in the church was moving. And so when I was with you on that Wednesday evening, a little bit more than a month after, that is precisely where I was. I went back to that moving prayer and recognized how absent it is in some practices, and how powerful it is to move and sing and pray.
Yeah, and that, you know, actually I'm a white woman, and I've been very inspired for many years by the black congregational singing experience. I used to go to a black church, and, you know, it is a really different thing to allow your body to move, just as you just expressed, while you sing, because our feelings, you know, are more accessible when we're moving. And
why is that, Kathleen?
I don't know why.
It is true.
Because when we hold our feelings, we hold our body. I mean, and so we grew up, you know, white people usually grow up in a culture where we sat still. We held ourselves still, not to say that black people don't hold themselves still in the right circumstances.
Of course.
But
in
a church, you know, we held ourselves still.
Yes.
Or in a piano lesson, we held ourselves still. And that puts it blocks musical expression, and it also blocks feelings. And all of that is part of spirit. So it blocks access to spirit, too.
So I know that our time is ever precious, but I just need to understand one thing. when you became a songwriter, and you've been doing this for a long time, and I'm sorry, in the beginning, yeah, I queued it up as a 10-year songwriter, hardly. Where did you draw the connection between movement and singing and songwriting?
That's a really good question. I think it was, I mean, I was, like I said, I saw it was happening in a black church, so that was the first place. But also, I taught nursery school music for 10 years. And when you work with children, you have to do movement with the songs or they will be completely bored. I saw that, you know, the way that, how much more fun it was for me to sing while I moved. So when I started the chorus, we did some of those children's songs. We sang this, down in the valley, 2x2, 2x2, my baby, 2x2. We squatted down, and then we, show us your motion, 2x2. Rise, children, rise. And we did the songs that I'd been doing with the children. We did them. And we still do sometimes do these with the grown-ups, too. But then I was like, okay, I want movement with the songs. You know, we had to start making up some dances to go with the songs, so we started doing that. And then I thought about these people that have something called Dances of Universal Peace, which is like a movement that started in the 60s, started in San Francisco with this guy who was kind of a mystic, Zen, Jewish, mystic Christian. He studied in all those mystical traditions. Hmm. His name was Samuel Lewis. And he wanted to create peace through the arts. So he took the mantras, the spiritual phrases from all those different traditions and put simple circle dances to them. So Christian, Muslim, Jewish, you know, whatever he could, you know, whatever he was into, he brought these dances and people started doing it. He was an older guy, but he did it with a lot of the young hippies in San Francisco. So that's 50 years ago, and now these dances are in 50 countries around the world, and many, many other people have written dances. So I thought, I should go, I knew about this, but I hadn't done it. I had done it a tiny bit. So I went and apprenticed and got a mentor and became a certified dance leader. So that's something that gave me this huge repertoire of beautiful spiritual songs that have dances with them. So we do some of those in the chorus. And if people are interested in Dances of Universal Peace, there are a lot of dance leaders around here. There's a dance every month in Durham on the third Saturday of the month. There's a dance in Chapel Hill on the second.
Hmm.
Or the third's Tuesday, I think it is. There's one in Raleigh. There's one in Pittsburgh. So you can look up Rose Heart Sufi community online and find out all those places. So for people that don't know, Sufis are the mystical branch, really, of Islam. And when I say mystical, I mean, because all religions, all the big religions have a mystical core. Christianity, Buddhism is kind of mystical in its nature already, but Christianity, Judaism, and Islam all have these very deep traditions. And some of those were hidden from the masses of people. But there's always been people in those religions who were having a very direct experience of God and feeling the heart, like I did in that experience I had, feeling that the heart in them is the same heart of Christ or the same heart of God. You know, so the Sufis are the Islamic mystical core. And this, locally, the people who put on these dances. I'm not a Sufi particularly myself. You don't have to be a Sufi, mm-hmm. but the people who organized it are, a lot of them are Sufis. Yeah.
So we talk about these simple circle dances. And when I saw this listener, I have to tell you it's very simple. But simple does not mean unpowerful.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it is easy. Sometimes simple doesn't mean easy, but it was a very moving and gentle, and our circle was coming in toward a center and then coming away from the center and then moving. I think we were moving in a clockwise area way. And what we remembered or reminded each other in this process is the unifying aspect of our participation. And you just get blended into a very powerful experience.
Yeah. And that is, you know, the Sufis in the Middle East and in Turkey, they do these kind of dances too.
Is it the whirling dervish?
The dervishes, they're turning, but there's also these circles that move, unified circles like that. So that's partly where Samuel Lewis got the idea of doing these dances, with that there's this tradition in Sufism of doing that.
So as we plan on returning in a few minutes, we take our little announcements of our radio station and stuff. I'd like us and listener to think about the time when you were alone singing loudly and you thought no one could hear you and you're feeling safe enough to open up those channels. And then I want you to imagine feeling that level of safety among a group of women singing. And that's what Kathleen does. So when we return, we're going to pick up our conversation.
Man, I couldn't say it better.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help donate, or help support, rather, one of our many featured news programs and information programs, click on the PayPal donate button at the top of the main page of our site. Again, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you are with us. You are listening to WCOM Community Radio in the heart of Carrboro, North Carolina. We have in our studio today the musician, songwriter, choreographer, community builder, and just delightful person, Kathleen Hannon. And we've been listening to some of her cuts from her track, her release, a CD, which is called Seen and Unseen, Songs from the Light of Midlife. It's a beautiful album. It's a CD. We've been pulling out some cuts with Bill's superb skills at the soundboard, which is allowing me to concentrate on my guests. But when we broke, I asked you all that I was going to tell you a question. And the question for you all is this: who are you when no one is looking? And as you answer that question and think about it, I've asked Kathleen to play a little bit.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved someone like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fear relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. Was grace that brought us safe thus far, and grace will lead us home. When we've been here 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun. You sing it with me. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves someone like me. I once was lost, but now was blind, but now I see.
Oh, my dear, this is a first. Somebody who had the courage to lift me out of my staid realm of journalism and broadcasting. I've never sung on the show before.
There we go.
I have sung after.
That's what happens in chorus. You just don't expect it, and suddenly you're singing.
This is, listeners, I really, really appreciate the fact that our radio show, Courage Cocktail, has a, in conception, was devised as a something to help people find new medicine for vexing problems. And it was born out of a book that I'd written that was a companion piece to describing our relationship with fear and how it influences and informs many of our decision-making skills, and in many ways can impair it, and in many ways can support them. So we never overcome fear. I've always proposed that we befriend her. And I'm listening here, and so much of our community and our culture and our civilization has been, I'm so scared of singing. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. And then, you know, once you find that key of I can't do this, it's remarkable how big that shelf can grow. Once you start saying those things, you can add to that, well, I can't do that, and I can't do this either. And by the way, did I mention that, you know, I'm a very, very poor painter? all these things. And I'm learning now that there are breakthrough moments that people can have when they make peace with their own limits. It's not saying they don't exist. It's saying that I can live with this limitation and let me figure out how to bring my best forth. So I have these questions about gaining confidence through being a participant in your choral group or a chorus. What happens when people start week after week coming to you?
Well, they start to sing better, for one thing. I mean, they get confidence because they're singing better. And the reason they're singing better is all these things we've been speaking of. When you relax, you sing better. You know, I'm an Alexander Technique teacher, which is a body awareness thing. And when we get aware of our bodies, when we let our bodies expand into space and lengthen, the tension that we have goes away, and our bodies just know how to sing. They just start singing. So I have ways.
Magic secret sauce ways.
Of encouraging people to, what we've been saying. Like I said, if you dance while you sing, you relax. If you notice the space around you, notice the space above your head and behind you and out beyond the walls right now, if everybody does that where you are, you'll notice that your body will relax a little bit if you sense yourself out further than the physical limits of your body. Sense the space way above the ceiling, down into the ground, out to the sides. So we work with this all the time. And we also work with this hearing self and other. The minute that you do that, you become part of this beautiful music. You stop worrying about whether you sound good enough because you're part of the whole, and it's not a performance. A performance, you know, is a beautiful thing, and there are a lot of choirs and community choruses around here where people who want to do performance singing, that's a wonderful thing too. And what we're doing is different in that none of it is for some other people to listen to. It's all for our own joy of making music, which if you talk to musicians and you ask them why you do it, mostly they'll say it makes you happy. It makes you happy to play music, and it makes you happy to sing. And who knows why? One reason why is because your mind stops while you're singing. When these mantras, these ancient chants from different cultures, part of what happens is what they call discursive mind in Buddhism, the mind that just goes in loops and says the same things over and over again, it stops while you're singing. It stops while you're singing anything, but especially in these ancient mantras that resonate the body in a certain way. So there's actually one on my album that is one of my favorites. It's from Buddhism. It's from Tibetan Buddhism, and it's called Om Mani Padme Hum, or in India, in Sanskrit, it's called Om Mani Padme Hum. And this chant, what it means is the jewel is in the lotus. And what that means is in each of our hearts is the awake heart of the Buddha. It's not something that you have to go get. It's something that's already here, and it's spiritual awakening is about bringing our awareness to what's already here. And in Buddhism, they know this. It's in the ancient understanding that was passed on from the Buddha. So this chant, it's prayed as a prayer for awakening of all beings, and it's the prayer that's on the prayer flags that you see in a lot of neighborhoods here in Chapel Hill.
And in Carborough.
And Carborough. Sure. You see it all through Tibet and Nepal and India, these prayer flags fluttering in the wind, and they say that the folklore says that prayer goes on the back of the winged horse and flies to all corners of the earth. So you imagine Buddhists all over the world are praying right now for all of us to awaken to our true nature. Extremely powerful. So when you sing it, you send it out, but you also can receive it because it's being prayed for us to awaken to our true. You could call it Christ nature. You could call it Buddha nature. It's the same thing. It's knowing that we are divine and that our heart is the same as the heart of these great spiritual teachers.
And it's a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song. And There's one more thing I wanted to say about it. Just this particular melody was brought to the United States by a Tibetan monk who used to lead singing at the Dalai Lama's temple, and he lives in this country now. Can't think of his name right this second. But he said that when he was a child, this particular melody of this prayer was chanted during festivals in his village for days at a time, and it didn't stop. If you think about that, you woke up in the morning and you heard people singing and you sang it all day long. And then when he went to be a monk, he heard that same melody. He was a little boy. You know, those children go pretty young into the monastery. And he heard the monk singing the same melody, even though it was far away from his home. And then he knew that he would be at home there when he heard that song. So here it is.
So grateful for you bringing us that track and putting that, including that in the CD. And in case you just happen to be tuning in, you're listening to WCOM LP. We're in the heart of Carver, North Carolina. We're listening to tracks from Songs from the Light of Midlife. We're with the songwriter, performer, choreographer, community builder, I could go on and on, Kathleen Hannon. And if you're interested in learning more, her website is www.kathleenhannon.com. Look at H-A-N-N-A-N is the last name, the correct spelling of her last name. And for many of us who are not familiar with Sanskrit, the song you are listening to, I'm going to say it very slowly, it's Om Mane, M-A-N-E, Pem, P-E-H-M-E, Hung, H-U-N-G,
Pem. Almost, but it's Om.
Om.
Which, you know, Om is Om, the sound of the universe. It means the sound of the universe. It's amazing.
Yes, and say the whole thing, the whole phrase. Oh,
so it's Om. This is actually Tibetan pronunciation, so it's not exactly Sanskrit, or maybe, I don't even know. I think it's, but anyway, it's the Tibetan pronunciation of it. Om Mane Peme Hung. And hung means realization, awake. So the other two words are the jewel in the lotus. I can't remember which is which, but the jewel is in the lotus, awake.
So
now,
it's
already.
A call to action. It's a call to peace.
Awareness.
Call
to it's a call
awareness.
To awareness that, of what's already here. So the thing is, you know, we tend to, especially in our culture, think we have to get somewhere. We have to fix things. We have to go somewhere. So we tend to put that on our spiritual journey, that we have to get somewhere. But these ancient teachings actually tell us that we have to stop trying to get somewhere. We don't have to go anywhere, because who we really are is already here, and it's already free.
So contemplating the richness of these messages, the observations that we make in this unfortunate hour, only an hour, we learning that your work is spanning geography. It's spanning faiths. It's certainly spanning repertoire. But it also describes that you must have picked up a tremendous amount of songs along your journey, Kathleen.
Yeah, I think, they say that musicians, the part of the brain that does music is bigger in musicians than other people, obviously. But the part of the brain that collects songs is big in me. I don't have room for hardly anything else in my brain. Because I've been interested in songs before I even wrote songs myself. When I was a kid, I had thousands of pieces of paper with lyrics to songs. I just always collected songs. And when I had this heart experience, I was drawn to songs that were describing that, like this O Mani Peme Hung. It's really what I experienced. The jewel is in the lotus. So now I have a bunch of songs that are easy to sing, that are from all different cultures, that point to that. They point to the heart. I mean, this one song, I learned it from a preschool teacher. I think she got it. I think it was a Christian song in the church, but she changed it a little to use with her children, and it goes, Leanne woke up with the sun in her heart. Leanne woke up with the sun in her heart. Leanne woke up with the sun in her heart. She's gonna shine all day, all day. She's gonna shine all day. So there it is again. That's the same thing. The sun is in your heart. So we sing that in chorus, but we put all our names in it. That's how we call it a name song, and we sing everybody's name in the circle.
And this happens. We listen to each other, and remarkably, I could have remembered every single woman's name there. For some reason, it just sticks when it's sung.
Yeah.
And thank you. That's a lovely gift, by the way. I've never been harmonized before. But I wanted to, I know that our journey has to, for a moment, at least in the waves that we're broadcasting on, it will have a break point, a stopping point. I wanted to reveal another story, if I may, in the last few minutes here. And real fast. I was in the green room, which is actually orange, just like the walls of our studio, talking to Kathleen, and I was describing that the power of her work is to, there's a certain emphasis among the spirituality among women, not any one brand of spirituality, but the fact that so much of our being and who we're, what we're responsible for and our roles, there is a certain animation to these many, many wondrous things, as there are in men's lives. It's not one or the other. They are of maybe of slightly different keys. But I happened to pick up a book. It happened to be a prayer book that was inherited in our family for many, many years, 1882, a gift to my paternal grandmother. And inside that book was a folded up piece of paper. And I opened it up, and it was a prayer, and it was called Mrs. Fillmore's Prayer. And it was, you could see, it was on page 286. It was a three piece of paper. My guess, it was 20th century. But I was called to that when we came here before this program, because so much of this experience of lives has to include some otherness in many ways, that, and to have the confidence to share that with other women, I think is an extraordinary gift you're giving women.
Yeah, I was raised in a religion that, a Christian religion that had men, men were running the whole thing. There's men up on the altar, it was altar boys and men up there. And so as a child, I didn't feel like it was me. I didn't feel like it was me that really had access to God. Now, not everybody, that was Catholicism, and not everyone felt that way. I know people who grew up so connected to Mary, and they felt Mary was, you know, in fact, compared to other Christian religions, there's a lot of feminine in it because of Mary.
I was surrounded by nuns who ran the show, there are different ways of expressing experiences.
Right, so everybody had different experience, but it is definitely run at the top. It's run by men, you know, and Christ was a man. So then I heard about the Buddha, and Buddha was a man, you know, and later in my life, much later, I heard, for instance, about the, I forgot now what they're called, there was this whole movement in the Middle Ages in Europe where women had these villages all by themselves. And it was because there were wars, crusades and stuff. There weren't as many men around. Mm. But that's where Mechtilde of Magdeburg, all these Christian mystic women wrote poetry. Hildegard of Bingen.
Yes, Saint Hildegard of Bingen.
Yeah. And they ran these places where women leaders who felt an intimate connection with God were writing stuff that women were listening to and reading. And I was like, this happened? Nobody told me this in Catholic school. Nobody told me about these women. So anytime I get hear about a woman mystic who actually had a direct spiritual experience, I want to share that. And so we have another one on the album. It's from the 14th century in India, a woman named Lal Ded. She's also called Lala. And she's also called, I think, Crazy Lala, because she was very young. She was very in love with God and in Shiva and her religion. God is called Shiva. And she ran away from her marriage. She was married at age 12 or something like that, and she ran away at age 14 and went in praise of Shiva. And she was a poet, and she just spoke verses, and everyone loved her because she was not in India there were a lot of academic religious leaders who had these old books that they have in India, really powerful teachings, but she was coming directly from her heart and directly from connection to God. So the poor people and the people who weren't involved in that hierarchy of religion really responded to her, and still do today. She's very well known in North India, Lala, and this song goes, "The soul is new and ever new again, like the moon, again, like the moon."
Well, we might go out on that, playing that tune, whatever track it may be,
seven.
Kathleen, track 7. And forgive me, I may have to talk over it as our time is quickly coming to a close. I want to thank our underwriters, who are the Vidari Chocolate Factory.com, www.vidarichocolate.com, and also Art Those Boutique, a place where all things can be found in publishing. It's www.authorsboutique.com. And you know me. We'll be here next week. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the courage cocktail.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, Kathleen, thanks for joining us. Thank you, Bill.
When that was so, I left my clothing by the road and began to dance. The soul is new and ever